broad minds, broad hosts, but not just for broads. This is Broadscast with Kim Goldman and Jackie McDougal.
Hey, we don't have to say our names because our intro says it.
Good morning.
Hi.
I am Kim Goldman.
And I'm Jackie McDougal.
Oh, that's what we should do. It's the day before Halloween. Well, let's be each
freaky,
other.
It's Freaky Friday. Why don't we just have it be Freaky Friday?
All right. I'm going to be you for a couple minutes.
Oh, God. How's that?
Oh, here we go.
You have the best laugh. That's why I was trying to channel Jackie's laugh. That came out.
Go. Go ahead. Be me. No. You got to be me. I'm going to be you.
No. I'm not prepared for this. I needed to come into character. I didn't have no notes. I've had actually 5 years of notes on the Jackie McDougal character.
Yes. I am Kim Goldman, and I'm judging you silently.
I'm just going to judge you out loud then on Twitter and on Facebook. Wow.
And
anyway,
Yeah, I'm not sure. I'm not sure that our friendship.
We were ready for that.
I'm not sure our friendship could survive this impromptu character.
No.
Yeah.
Sheesh.
Let's go back. Regular Friday. Hi,
Kim. Good morning.
I'm Jackie.
Hi.
So, good morning. Anyway, lots of things happening. It's the day before Halloween. Are you dressing up?
I'm not a fan of the Halloween.
Of course you're not.
I don't know. I'm not a fan.
Is your kid dressing up? He's 12 now.
He's kind of indifferent to the whole thing.
I wonder where he gets it.
Probably from me. But in general, he's kind of indifferent. My best friend Denise, we were talking about it with her kids, same age. They're feeling the same thing. They want the candy,
yeah,
but they don't want to work for it. So Sam went to school today as Batman.
You know that we are raising an entitled generation when they don't even want to work for Halloween candy.
Yeah.
They're just like, could you just bring it to me while I sit on the couch playing my iPad?
Yeah. But he went to school as Batman today.
Really? Do you think that kids – what age do you think that kids should stop?
I don't think you should ever stop. I think if you embrace it and it's important to you. I read something on Facebook the other day that this woman reported that this door showed up at her house. So someone knocked on the door. She opened it up and it was a door. And it was just a door and it said, please knock. And so she knocked on the door. And on the other side were all of these college kids dressed as grandmas and grandpas and parents. And they were like pinching her cheeks and giving her candy, like, because they said that like it should go both ways.
Aww.
And that they really wanted to still celebrate.
That's cute.
Yeah, it was very cute.
I will tell you, this is one of many things I've either written about or spoken about. I used to think that if your voice is changing, it's time to stop. But I don't think that anymore. You know, and now I have one who's 11, and it's just like, you know, if you're in the spirit, if you're not out there causing trouble, but you're just like having a good time, I don't care if you're 40.
Yeah.
Or 44. So,
yeah.
You know, I just think – life is too short not to have fun.
Yeah, and to just enjoy.
So
yeah.
So,
but no, I will not be. I will wear my honorary Halloween shirt that has a pumpkin on it.
Oh,
that's pretty much all I will be.
Sexy.
Doing.
All right. So what do you got for topics today?
This week and probably every other week for the next year, we will be listening to the diatribe of the Republican Party and all of their GOP debates.
Mm.
With that being said, a couple days ago, or yesterday, maybe, perhaps it was Brooke Baldwin from CNN did a little monologue about how disappointed she was in the ladies from The View because
one's ever been disappointed with them.
And they've never said anything controversial. But apparently they had some comments to make about Carly Fiorina. Fiorina.
Mm-hmm.
And her appearance during the debates on earlier this week.
Right.
So
didn't they say her face looks demented?
It looked demented because apparently some of the complaints that Carly was getting from her peeps was that she doesn't look like she's enjoying it. She doesn't smile enough.
Okay.
And so when she did her opening monologue, I don't even know any of the new hosts. There's a couple new hosts added to The View. I don't know her name.
Well, Whoopi is there and Joy is back, right? And then the chick, a little who we used to think was cute on Cosby Show, and now she's just obnoxious.
Something. So. Yeah.
Raven
Simone. Anyway,
that's
one
so
of the
Raven.
One of the hosts was saying that she was smiling so much that her face looked demented.
Okay.
And then Joy Behar came in and said that it looked like she was wearing a Halloween mask.
Okay.
So, having said that, in the big scheme of things, I don't think those were the worst comments to make.
However, that's not the worst that's been said about Carly for.
No, but Brooke Baldwin's point was, come on, ladies, stick together. Why are we talking about her appearance as opposed to who she was as a candidate for president on that platform that night, as opposed to just focusing on her
because
looks.
that's sadly
they wouldn't
what
be doing
we
that
do
about the men.
No, and that's what we do to women as a whole. as a society is that forget about. I mean, look at Hillary. It's like, oh, is she warm and cuddly? She's not soft enough. Like, I was talking to my mother-in-law the other day about this. Like, I don't want my president to be soft. I mean, as far as like, sure, she should be emotional and have capability to nurture, but that's not what we're asking.
Well,
you know, she's not going to be like suckling the leaders of other countries. I'm sorry.
Maybe that would get us a little further. But the point is that we don't do this with the men, with the male candidates.
Some of them we do.
I mean, people rip on Trump, but yeah. People have been always ripping on Trump regardless of what he does. But I don't think they don't comment on the color of their tie, the color of their suit, their posture, you know, the crook in their neck or their eye. Like, they don't do that, but they take apart.
I think they do, but at the same time, I think, you know, we sit here wanting to have history being made and the first female president and, you know, but then we're going to sit there and do that. Like, ladies, we have a choice here. We can either support, even if she's not your candidate, but we can support that women are stepping up in these leadership positions. We're constantly, you know, hearing about how there aren't as many CEOs and women aren't doing this and women aren't doing that. And every time they do step up, this is what we're talking about.
Well,
it's ridiculous.
Right. But the irony of this,
I'm mad. As my kid used to say as a baby, I'm so mad.
The irony of this, though, is that that Joy Behar came after Donald Trump a couple weeks ago for making comments about Carly Fiorina's facial expressions or whatever. And then she went after him for saying, why are you focusing on her face as opposed to her presence?
Right.
So the irony is
it's like
is
the sibling relationship. Like, you can't beat up my sister, but I can.
Right, right.
Yeah. Right. I mean, it's ridiculous.
I don't know. I mean, I appreciate and applaud Brooke Baldwin for whatever people think about CNN. I appreciate that she came out and kind of called the ladies out for not supporting each other. Have your opinions. And, you know, I do think that it was probably made in jest, but it sort of just speaks to what I think is a systemic issue that we have about how people and women treat each other and
blah, blah. No, blah. But absolutely. And, you know, being called broadcast, I think that it's really important. Even if, like, sometimes you and I will get – or more – I will get caught up in that sometimes, and I'll start making fun – like, comments where I'm just, oh, she's – you know. I think we should call each other out and call other people out. Like, let's not – we cannot bring women to the next level in history if this is what we're going to continue to do.
Well, we can if we name them Woman of the Year in a recent article.
Oh, look at you, segue.
Of Glamour magazine. has put the woman we all know is Caitlyn Jenner. She has been listed as one of the top 25 women of the year.
Okay.
For this year.
Wait, so she's not the, she's
no, no,
top
no.
25.
She is one of, I'm saying 25, because I'm pretty sure that's what it is, but, I could be totally
that's
wrong.
That's a lot of women.
But, it is a lot of women, and she stands aside Elizabeth Holmes, who is the youngest self-made female billionaire at 31 years old.
Wow.
Misty Copeland, who
– Wait,
okay,
go back
sorry.
To her.
Oh, I didn't tell you why.
What is she a billionaire
She
for?
Revolutionizes blood tests to change the control average citizens have over their own health. She walked out of – she dropped out of Stanford to
wow.
follow this dream. At 20 years old, she did that. Now at 31, she's the youngest self-made female billionaire in the world.
Wow.
Also named is Misty Copeland, who is the first African-American ballerina to reach the elite classical ballet company.
Yeah. Look at you. You're like talking it down, though.
I'm not talking it down. I don't.
She's pretty amazing. She's broken through some serious barriers.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not being diminishing. Oh, my God. Charleston Strong. She's a peacemaker. She was one of her family was killed in the Charleston, South Carolina massacre. What are you looking? She's the some of the women from Charleston Strong,
oh,
the peacemakers.
There's a team of women
that are advocating.
What are the chances? That's her name.
No. Oh, sorry. I didn't say women from. Sorry.
That's all right.
It got me all caught off guard here. Team USA, of course, the FIFA Women's World Cup champions.
Oh, my future wife. That's so funny.
Yeah.
Abby.
Anyway, the point of all of this is that Caitlyn Jenner named as one of these top 25 female women of the year has gotten a little bit of slack from people on social media saying she hasn't even been a woman for a full year. So how can she be named female woman of the year?
Right.
What do you think?
I don't think that she should be the Woman of the, like, I thought it was that they were naming her Woman of the Year, and mm-hmm. that's because I, but I think that she has an important, and you know how I feel about that family that she's connected to mm-hmm. by birth and marriage. But I think that she's done a lot to open eyes and maybe some hearts to the transgender community. I think that it's a huge step. So whether you, I couldn't have less respect for that family. However, if this is who we need in order to take awareness and understanding of the transgender community one step further, then I'll be it. I'm good. If it's one of 25, because it, when you start reading about some of these other people too, it's like, that's the problem with, you know, there are so many people, and it happens in our own community too sometimes, but there are so many people that are doing huge things, but people just get caught up with the same people just regurgitating the same awards and regurgitating,
right.
You know, like go, go, go. When there are other people who are, you know, maybe not so vocal or maybe not so like high profile, that we need to find those people and,
I guess I guess that's what I'm focusing on, is I would rather focus on people that don't get the accolades. I mean, no disrespect to Caitlyn Jenner, and I'm a full advocate for equality and for, you know, for living out your life the way that you want, but I don't necessarily feel like she's earned the spot as compared to some of these other women have. Yeah. And so
if I were transgender, she's the last person I would want as my spokesperson.
And P.S., there are a lot of groups that state that publicly that, you know, they don't want to take away from her plight, but it's not representative of the transgender community.
Correct. Just like gay pride parades are not representative of, you know,
gay
life. But I
guess for me, I would rather, like, if she's going to choose to put herself in this way, and she doesn't have to be an advocate, P.S. Like, there's no one is forcing her into that. Yeah. I don't care if she is or she isn't. But to keep giving awards, I'm confused by it when you, again, put it in comparison to the other people that are actually making a difference and fighting for equality for women and Planned Parenthood and women that are starting companies to promote equality, like
But
Reese
who is this?
Witherspoon.
But is this Glamour magazine?
Yes, who's competing with Cosmopolitan that puts the Kardashian on their cover as the first family of America.
Excuse me, I just threw up a little.
I'm allowed to say that
name,
sorry.
But I know, but but here's the thing. What's going to sell magazines? What's going to get clicks on the internet? Is it these amazing people that no one's ever heard of? No.
Right.
So it's like you have that's the problem. It's also an industry. It's a business. So Glamour has to find enough of those people who are going to get clicks on the story. And then you can learn about the other people because they're really important. But, you know, the people from Charleston or you know, I'm just trying
Team
to see
USA.
Who else.
Yeah.
Like Elizabeth Holmes, the entrepreneur, they're not going to sell magazines. So they need this. So I do applaud the fact that, like, let's toss her in, get people to – so that way we can educate them with the rest of this information. Otherwise, no one cares.
Yeah, but
isn't that sad, though?
Yes, but I'm concerned, though, that most people would say, oh, why would they do that? I'm not going to read it because I don't want to support that.
Yeah, but I think more people will do it, so – I know. It's just the way it is. So, China.
I can see that segue. That was good.
Smooth. I don't even need segues. I mean, that's the thing. I'm segue free. So China has upped their family policy to 2 kids as opposed to 1.
Right.
So it used to be one. You could only have 1 child.
Right.
And that's why there are a lot of baby girls who've come out of China for adoption. International adoption and such, because families wanted the boy to carry on the family.
So was the policy just that you could only have 1 child in your home? I mean, like that. So basically what you're saying is people can have as many kids as they want, but they can only have 1 child in the home. And then they, I don't understand what you're saying.
No, so, I mean, like the families were, I mean, children have been abandoned on the side of the road or
because you're only allowed to have 1 child in your home.
Well, yeah.
Right?
I mean,
like,
but they've forced abortions. They've forced it's serious. Not just in your home. Like you're only allowed to have 1 child. So people will secretly have another child, and then dispose, hopefully safely, of that child after they're born.
Why would you secretly have a child to dispose of the child?
Well, because if they find out they're pregnant or
You're saying they wouldn't intend to have a child that if
I'm sorry not intentionally but okay. They've you know a woman finds out she's pregnant and then she kind of keeps it under wraps
right
and then, you know, and having an internationally adopted child who's not from China. So it's a right. very, very different circumstances in Taiwan. It's not even comparable. But thousands and thousands of babies would come out of China every year.
Right.
And so I am curious, because a few years back when we were adopting, they changed the qualifications of right. parents, you know, adoptive parents. And so people have been waiting for years and years. It used to be, you know, up to a year and then you'd have your baby and blah, blah, blah. But now people have been waiting for years. So I think this actually could slow down. Well, and the reason that they changed it is because the country's aging out.
Right. Well, so now they're allowing people to have two kids.
Yes.
So they, but I guess some of the criticism was that they don't want the government to be controlling their population in that way.
Yeah, but nothing's changed. You're just allowed one more.
Right.
You know, I mean, the government is just as controlling, at least based on, you know, what I've read. But it's
I wish we could impose some of those controlling issues here with who can be parents.
You,
I know that.
Are you being flip or are you real?
I don't know. Because sometimes right, I think...
You know I'm one of 13.
It's not... No. I think that there are parent there are people that have children that don't do right by their child.
But,
and I
but,
feel
but
like...
But here's the thing. China is not stopping, you know... bad people from having babies.
I'm moving from China, just wondering, like I've always thought this, that, you know, we put restrictions on people to buy, you know, guns, houses. They have to go through a very, you know, a process.
Please. What? There's no restriction. You have
stuff,
stuff
in my
hair. I'm sorry. I'm just pulling it out as you talk.
Yeah. For the line of people looking in to date me, we want to make sure my hair is pretty.
Yes, I do.
I just, we have such restrictions in other areas with who can, you have to apply for license. You have to apply to go to school, you have like all the things that we do to put people restrictions on who gets in certain places. But
right.
for people to have babies, anybody can just have a baby. And yeah. I just sometimes wonder, like, why don't we help parents be more equipped? Like, make sure that they take parenting classes. Make sure that they. I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm just.
Well, I've actually taken classes. You know, as you know, I have a child with special needs. So in order to get services, we had to take parent education classes as far as like learning how to deal with autism and this and that and the other thing. And I remember saying to my husband, like, every parent could benefit from this. It doesn't make you perfect. It just makes you understand a little bit more.
Right.
And how to deal with kids. And you know, so I agree with you that.
That's all I'm saying. I was being flip about putting more control on who can have kids. I just wish that there were more support and more services for the people that have kids, and that because we don't have restrictions here and we do have a lot of kids that are abandoned and neglected and just kind of left by the wayside. And I just wish we were more, I don't know, able to help that not happen and
right,
help.
Right.
I don't know. Now I just brought the mood down.
No, but that's why, you know, you work with the teenagers who sometimes did go through some of these neglect or, you know, just even just not the optimal situation at home. And, you know, I'm glad that you're there to help them. If only there were programs like the Youth Project for younger, you know.
Well, that wasn't supposed to be a PSA for the Youth Project, well, but I do believe just in general, you know, about wanting to advocate. I'm a big advocate for anybody. And so I always just wish that there were more things available for people that if you choose to walk down that road of being a parent or whatever, that you have the support you need. So.
Right. So when we come back, you know, from our little break that we're about to take. So I know so many people who can relate to losing a child, you know, soon after birth, during pregnancy, up until the end where they think they're, you know, going to have a healthy pregnancy and a healthy baby. But it's an extremely relatable experience. I think that a lot of people have gone through, and Dr. Kylie Krikorian-Hanisch, is actually the founder of Return to Zero, or the creator of Return to Zero, which was a movie starring Minnie Driver. Oh my gosh, I watched the trailer and I couldn't even get past that, but I am going to watch the movie this weekend because I think it's really interesting. But she's going to be here and we are going to talk with her about recovery and
transformation
and after trauma and loss. So stick around and we will be right back with Broadcast. When Broadcast was looking to relaunch our website, we knew exactly who to call. The team at Stark Social Media.
At Stark Social, they understand the importance of a strong online presence.
From marketing and branding, web design, and social media, the in-house team listens to their clients' needs and budget and responds with a tailor-made plan for your small business, nonprofit, or startup.
Stark Social's philosophy is simple: do good work. And they live by that philosophy every day.
Stand out from the competition and contact Stark Social Media today at starksocial.com.
You're listening to Broadscast with Kim Goldman and Jackie McDougal, two broads with faces made for radio.
Yes. Yeah, that's easy because Dr. Kylie Krikorian Hanisch. I'm like, oh, that's a lot.
Dr. K.
Yay. So I've just been ingesting everything that you are doing. And it's just the work that you do is so incredibly important. But let's go back and kind of start with your story. Tell us a little bit about your pregnancy.
Pregnant with my first child mm-hmm. in 2005. Mm-hmm. And then I was 35 weeks pregnant and I went into labor early mm-hmm. and I went to the doctor. And at that point I learned my son had died in utero. Mm-hmm. So
I'm so sorry.
Thank you. And I went into shock. I went into shock for 6 months, but just not knowing what to do. And there wasn't anybody there telling me these are things that you should consider doing during mm-hmm. this time. Because I wasn't the first person that this has happened to.
Right.
It happens a lot. Like in the U.S., there's 26,000 babies that are stillborn a year.
Wow. Wow. So what are some of the things that you were saying that nobody, wish they told you?
Yeah. I mean, I guess I wish they would have told me to spend more time with him.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's the one time that you're meeting your baby and saying goodbye at the same time. Oh. And so that there's ways to parent your child even though they're not living, that you can bathe them, you can dress them, you can take photos, you can sing to them, read them story, like all of that. And just being with them, it's because mm-hmm. it's the only time ever that you will.
Right.
And I just felt like that the attitude of the hospital staff was very much like he was a piece of trash because he wasn't alive.
Gosh.
Rather than even though
it's very clinical.
Yeah. It is a very sad and tragic time, mm-hmm. but it can also be beautiful mm-hmm. in those memories that you're making with a baby. So I just wish that there was more guidance on what to do with the baby rather than just like, oh, he's dead. You can hold him. And we did take pictures with him.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a great group out there called Now I Lay Me Down to Sleep that goes in. They're volunteer photographers. They go in and do bereavement photography in the hospitals.
And were you connected with them?
I wasn't. They just formed in Colorado like that year, mm-hmm. so I wasn't. So we took photos ourselves, and they actually recently touched the photos up for us.
Oh, wow.
Which was right when the film came out, they gave it to us as a gift. So it was like nice to look at your baby and see them for who they are as a baby. And so now I have the photo framed on my desk. It's beautiful.
That is beautiful. And so, you know, you said for 6 months, I mean, you must have been in shock, you and your husband both. And yeah. How did the days that followed kind of go with your husband and what happened with your life? Like how did that?
Well, I don't remember a lot from it because I was like, felt like we both shut down, mm-hmm. but separately. So we were kind of on parallel tracks grieving, but just not interacting really, not with ourselves or with anybody else.
So you just kind of went on autopilot and how do you go back to work and you're back to your regular life and just kind of.
And you're trying to survive. I mean, like I was probably, I don't know, like in bed for, I mean, the other thing is you physically had a baby, so you have to physically recover from that whole process. So.
Right. And where do you feel like the shift happened where.
I felt like after 6 months, I was like sitting in bed and then I'm like, you know what? Okay. I'm ready to reengage in life again.
Mm-hmm.
And nothing really spurred that. It just kind of happened. But then I like signed up to go back and take a college course and all that. And then I got pregnant with my daughter. And then I was like, then that was a whole different, experience of being completely like out of control, anxious,
mm-hmm.
not knowing if your baby's going to live. So,
what did you do differently with the second pregnancy that to A, not, I mean, worry. To control your anxiety? I think we're always anxious when we're pregnant, but I can imagine with the second one that it was heightened to a level that is unimaginable. So what did you do? What did you do differently from the first to the second?
Well, I pretended I wasn't pregnant. I mean, not in the sense that I went to the doctor visits and all that, but I hid it from everyone. I didn't tell anyone. And my philosophy was, if I didn't get attached to the baby, then if the baby died, it wouldn't hurt so bad. I mean, it's not very healthy.
No, but it's a coping. I mean, that's an inherent coping mechanism that I think all of us feel when you've been hurt or you've been touched by any kind of trauma or pain, you shut down from it and you try to protect yourself from it again. I think that would be normal for you.
Yeah.
Did you do that for the entire pregnancy, or what, did someone help at some point say, Kylie, connect? Did your, I mean, no. I don't know where your husband was during this time. Was he able to experience that pregnancy with you and be able to have any joy in it, or did it just, it was kind of shut off?
Yeah, I think we both felt similarly. And then I went on to have a second or a third child.
Yeah.
Like 5 years after my daughter was born.
Yeah.
And that was still, it wasn't as bad because it wasn't as close, but it was still like I was 8 months pregnant and I hired a doula because I tried to recreate like a nice birth experience.
Right.
A little less trauma in there. And she's like, you're going to have a baby, Kylie. You have to talk to the baby. And I'm like, but you don't know that for sure.
Right.
Mm. So it's a hard time. And I think just with that, it's really important to educate moms and normalize that process of well, these are normal grieving symptoms, and then these are normal thoughts and feelings you're going to have in that pregnancy after a loss.
So I think Jackie was asking before, like, when the shift happened. So at some point you realize that I can do something with my story.
Yeah. And major shift that didn't happen until when the movie Return to Zero was being made.
Mm-hmm.
And I was really vulnerable. Like at the beginning, I was very scared of people knowing my story. And it's like a lot of bad things about, you know, like your deep, dark secrets. And,
but that was you and your husband together who created that movie.
Yeah.
And I mean, so it was your idea to tell your story, even as scary as it is.
Yeah.
You know, so how did you go from, this is my story, I'm living with this pain, you know, I'm kind of like protecting myself from the outside world, to, wow, maybe this could help other people? I mean, was that the intent of the movie? Or was it to kind of like go through your own process?
Well, I think my husband, he's a filmmaker. So mm-hmm. that was a story that he felt he needed to tell.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't, I didn't really get involved in it until it was in production, and there's been on social media such a huge response from people around the world because they felt like their story was being told.
Right.
And that their experience was validated. And so I think when I learned that the movie was helping people in their lives, that that was more important than me being scared or sheltered.
Mm-hmm.
And then I learned if I could share my experience to help other people, then it was worth it.
But you've taken this movie one step further in creating Return to Zero,
the Healing Center.
Healing Center, and also these retreats that people can go to. And it's all specific to stillborn, miscarriage, and also
infant loss.
What kind of experiences have you had? I mean, has this been, when you set out to create this, is it what you expected? Or, I mean, what's been the response to your healing center and the retreats?
Well, I feel that it has chosen me rather than me going out looking for it. Like, this is the work that I'm supposed to be doing right now.
Mm-hmm.
And it feels amazing. And, you know, like my idea to do the retreats came in the shower after I got an email from somebody asking for resources. And mm-hmm. there just isn't a lot out there, and there's nothing like this. And so it's like divine inspiration. I mean, Yeah. Really, like, there's a greater power working through me and being able to get people together who have been through this type of trauma. It's like communal healing. It's mm-hmm. amazing.
Do you find that people have a hard time discussing this kind of specific loss versus a child dying in a car accident? Or, I mean, is it a different?
I think it's different because it's the not a lot of people know the baby, only the parents really, and maybe the extended family.
Right.
And it most of the time hasn't lived outside the womb, or at least not for very long. So people think they don't know what to say first. So, I mean, in mm-hmm. general, people don't know what to say when somebody dies, but
right.
when somebody dies that hasn't really lived a full life, then they're at a loss for words. And so I think it is different. It isn't talked about very much. But once you bring it up, you'll hear people like, oh, that happened to my mom, or that happened to my sister, and that happened to my friend.
Right.
It seems like it's so extremely common. I mean, 1 out of 4 pregnancies result in miscarriage. But it's one of those things, too, that people just aren't as understanding, it seems, unless you've gone through it yourself. You know, because like you were just saying, like losing a child in a car accident, like people can imagine that. And
well, I think that people would, they assume that it's a greater grief because the attachment that you've had with that child is greater because they were 6 versus the loss that is felt from a stillborn. I think that there's a misconception about attachment and those feelings. And I think that's where people,
absolutely.
And it sounds like what you're trying to educate, that loss is loss. And that's still a very powerful loss, you know, in it, I would,
especially when you wonder what could have been.
Well, the loss is compounded. I would imagine. I haven't had that loss. I have a different loss. And I know that my loss is compounded by the what ifs and the yearning for the what could have beens. And so it adds a layer of loss. And I think the people that haven't experienced loss, regardless, can't really wrap their head around it, whether it's a stillborn, miscarriage, infant loss, or a later in life loss. Mm-hmm. And I think people in general have a hard time talking about grief because it's uncomfortable.
Right. So how were you able to kind of come back, you and your husband, together and go through this together? Because I think grief and loss, while two people may be going through the same thing, it kind of separates.
Yeah. I mean, I think we were on separate paths for a long time, but I think the making of the movie really helped us kind of revisit a lot of our memories together.
Right.
And working on a project that was about our son was helpful in that. There was a lot of healing there.
And how do you bring your son into your family with your daughter? And you have another child.
I have a son.
Like, how do you talk about him? How do you celebrate him in your home?
I have a little, like, 2 little areas in my office that are little things that are devoted to him, like his photo, a candle, little angels, stuff like that. And then, you know, we didn't talk about him a lot with my daughter until the movie came up. Mm-hmm. But she just associates the movie with like her dad being gone. Oh. 'Cause he's working on, you know, I'm sure that she's absorbing it. She's smart, mm-hmm. but she doesn't talk about it a lot. And then the little one, he's 3. He's like, oh, he died.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's lack of understanding of what that means. Yeah. So how can, you know, those of us who haven't been through this, or whether it's family, friends, you know, coworkers, how do you think people can be more compassionate or understanding? Like what are the mistakes that people are making with somebody who's gone through that experience?
Well, I think one mistake is not saying anything at all and just being silent, and the person feels really isolated. So I think it's important to say something, but it's also important not to say the wrong thing. So,
which is why they're silent.
Yeah. So like not to offer platitudes and cliches like, oh, you can have another baby or this was meant to be. God, you know, this was in God's plan and stuff like that. So it's something as simple as I'm so sorry for your loss is a great thing to say. At least it's just acknowledging it. Mm-hmm. It's also nice to give them a gift, a thought. Like it could be a candle. It could be a little angel. It you know, and there's those days that are really hard for parents, like the baby's anniversary, like mm-hmm. when they died or when they're born and died, whatever. It could right. be a due date that's coming up. Like, let's say they lost the baby early mm-hmm. and the due date's coming up, and just being sensitive and letting them know that you're thinking about them.
Right. So we got you in right at the tail end of Pregnancy and Infant Loss Awareness Month, and you wrote this incredible article on She Knows. And I love that you kind of gave some tips on how to cope with loss for women, and I specifically to women and how they can handle in those certain stages. So will you share a couple of those tips? I printed out just in case you forgot what you wrote, which I often do. But I mean, I loved it because I think that even though it's very specific to this loss, I think it really is universal and can apply
to anybody. Yeah. I mean, I think the first thing is being gentle with yourself, knowing that there are no stages of grief, that grief is crazy all over the place and it can get better, it can get worse, and there's no timeline to it. It doesn't ever go away. Like, it should, the intensity should get less, but it's always there because you love somebody and that's not going to go away.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And then I love the idea of creating a sacred area in your home that's to the memory of your baby. So like I have a photo and little knick-knack type of things that maybe I buy them when I'm somewhere when I'm thinking of him, like little angels or stones or crystals, that type of stuff. Mm-hmm. But that can be a nice thing. And it doesn't have to be in your living room. It can be in your own private space.
Right.
Whatever is comfortable for you. But living room's okay too. Like, some, you know, right. It just depends.
It's all on what you need and what works for
yeah.
you.
Do you find that people, and I'm going to let you go back to this, do you find that people are uncomfortable with that if they come to your home? I was accused once of having a sanctuary in my house to my brother, and I was like, well, learn to deal with it because it's not coming down. Mm-hmm. But I found that people were really uncomfortable with me kind of having that presence in my house because it forced them to
acknowledge.
Yeah. Do you ever find that, or
I'm not sure. I mean, I've never had
no
it public.
No one said it. Yeah, yeah.
You know, like, I've always had
his
it.
His friends are ruder than yours.
Yeah.
I mean, the yeah. other thing that's weird is, like, if the picture of the baby, if the baby's dead, like, we're not used to seeing
right.
pictures of dead people, right. Which in the past it was more normal, but right. now it's not.
Right.
But they almost think that you should be over it.
Right.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Like, you can
closure.
Do this. You should do this for 3 weeks. Like, I felt everyone was great for 3 weeks after our son died.
Yeah.
And then, like, after that, they just went back to their life, which they should go back to.
Right.
I mean, they have a life to live.
But they also assume that you should be done after 3 weeks because they've moved on.
Yeah.
Then they then assume you should. Yeah. What are, we can put it up on our website, the link,
yeah.
but you know, you went on to say about making connections with your baby to go to a special place. And then Jackie mentioned it earlier. You gave some great tips for friends and family, which, and I hope that these would also apply to the hospital staff, which you spoke about earlier, not feeling yeah. like they knew what they were doing. Do you ever feel the need to train or to reach out and invite them to your retreats or anything that you're doing to make sure that they're
like, well, Kim's latest book is training the media how to deal with people with trauma. You could do the same type of thing with,
well,
like, healthcare.
I am doing that. I'm going into hospitals and giving trainings. And then my colleague and I have created kind of like a cheat sheet postcard for the hospitals of
yeah.
when your baby dies, what are things that you should consider doing? Because the hospital staff may not know, and they can look at it for themselves and give it to the parents.
Right, right. Because I think that also, as a healthcare worker, not myself, but they probably see loss and trauma often that they kind of have to put that Teflon on and get themselves through. But you can't have that on when you're dealing with
yeah.
humans going through something so huge. So, but we just so appreciate you coming on and sharing your story. And Return to Zero is on Netflix now, yes?
It's on Amazon
okay.
Instant and iTunes right now, and hopefully coming to Netflix, but not
okay.
there yet.
Not yet.
And how cool soon. Is it to have Minnie Driver play you? I mean, I want to...
Yeah.
It's kind of cool.
And that cute guy from...
Paul Edelstein.
Yeah, I always forget his name. Well, he's not so cute on Scandal, but he was cute on The Practice.
Yeah.
Well, returntozerohealingcenter.com. You can find more information on what you're doing and also the retreats and where people can find information in their towns, right? I saw some resources on there. And then I hope people check you out, your movie out on Amazon Prime and iTunes.
Yes.
And thank you for sharing your story with us. Thank Dr. You. K. I want to give you props for the doctor. That's hard
earned. Dr. KH.
Yeah.
Dr. KKH.
Yeah.
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Thanks for being here.
And we will be right back with Broadcast.
Why should you become a Broadcast sponsor? Broad multimedia exposure, including radio, web, iTunes, YouTube, and social media sites like Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
A quick, easy way to reach your target demo, women. Exclusive, limited time only, affordable introductory rates.
Plus 20 years experience in on-air and online marketing. We produce your one-of-a-kind creative in-house, saving you time and money.
For more on becoming a Broadcast sponsor, visit Broadcast.com today.
You're listening to Broadcast with Kim Goldman and Sweet Little Jackie.
Well, welcome back.
Welcome back to Broadcast. Wow, I'm like jumping in my seat. We were saying goodbye and...
I know, sorry. No. I don't know why I'm
sorry. What
are sorry.
You sorry for?
I mean, we're not supposed to say we're sorry.
Ladies, stop saying you're sorry. Kim, stop saying you're sorry.
Sorry.
I'm sorry I gave you a hard time about saying sorry.
Sorry.
I love Kylie. She was just... we've honored many, many women here, broads, we like to call them, for going through like these experiences and not only coming out a little bit on the other side, but being able to share your experience and to teach and to support. It's just such, you know, and this isn't against men, but I just think women especially, like that compassion, that nurturing, and that ability to take something so difficult and to really connect with other people. You know,
yeah, I mean,
you do it every day.
She alludes, you know, mentioned how isolating it can be. And I think that's the one thing that if we're willing to put ourselves out there a little bit, you really do find that there's lots of people that connect and they resonate with what you're feeling and thinking. And it sounds like it took her some time to feel comforted by that. You know, it's scary and vulnerable to put yourself out
right.
there, but then you're like, wait, it's actually working and I'm not the only one. And even though people are watching, you know, I think that the connection that was being made and the impact hopefully is pretty profound in her healing process too.
But I think what's really important is because, and you and I have talked about this, but sometimes when you go through something and you see other people who've gone through a similar circumstance and then they're doing something positive with it, it can make another person feel like, wow, why am I still stuck in my stuff? While that person's out there, you know, being an advocate or teaching or doing something with it. And it doesn't mean that you're past it. It doesn't mean that you're over it. You found the closure. It just means you're in a different part of the journey, you know, not to be cliche, but so I like the fact that Kylie could talk about it and you've talked about your experience in a way where you know the pain is still there, you know the loss is still there, but you've just been able to get to a place where you can share this and everybody has their own timing. You know, it doesn't mean like, wow, it was 6 months later when she got out of bed and it's been 9 months for me and I'm not out of bed. Like,
right.
Give yourself a break.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, I think, you know, the other side to that too, though, is that not everybody, I mean, she's talked about it being like a calling for her. Not everybody, A, hears the calling.
Right.
B, listens to it or wants it.
Right.
You know, and I think, I mean, and we started the show with saying that kind of a thing, you know, that... You know, not everybody has to be an advocate. Like just because you've had an experience doesn't mean that you then have to go be a champion for that cause. Sometimes
your own
experience is more than enough to handle.
Right.
I've said that from my own. Like I go in and out of wanting to be an advocate. It's exhausting. It's burdensome. It's tiring. But it's also
and
really
it's
important.
Never stops.
And it never
it's
stops.
24/7.
So I think that, you know, it sounds like she kind of gave herself permission to feel what she felt and then move through it at different paces and kind of – almost sounds like the movie forced her a little bit into maybe having to face some of those things that maybe she wasn't otherwise. I mean, I'm just making
right. And creating the movie was, you know, her husband's way of addressing and, you know, moving to a different level, perhaps, you know, and we're not always on, you know, on the same page when it comes to moving in that direction, you know?
Yeah. I wonder what that conversation was like in their house. Yeah. I want to do the movie. I don't want you to do the movie. I wonder, like, if she was on board. I wish I would have asked her that, but didn't want to go too far off topic.
Yeah.
I like the interaction between couples, and, you know, you were talking about, like, how did they do this together or didn't they?
Right.
You know, I think for a lot of people, loss can absolutely tear a family apart, and it is such a strain on marriages, relationships, that it's hard to nurture those relationships when you're dealing with a loss that feels so isolating and paralyzing and depressive. And
it's amazing how two people can go through the same thing and just not it drives a wedge between them as opposed to brings them together. So, yeah.
Anyway.
You know, it's funny because after I had, you know, I found I had the breast cancer gene and I had surgery and all those things. And I went back to my doctor who had really kind of blown it off and was like, what are the chances? You know? And so I went back to him and I said, I just feel like you did me a huge disservice. You talked it down, you played it like it wasn't something that could happen. And if, you know, that I wouldn't have the gene and if I did, you know, we'd deal with it. Like he was just very cavalier about it. And when I went back and addressed it, he said, you know, you don't have to be an advocate for everybody else. Like, you've just been through a trauma. Why don't you just go through your trauma? And like, I'm not that person. Like I feel like my life experiences have been given to me in order to provide me with a voice and maybe an experience, or, you know, not necessarily an expertise, but at least compassion and understanding for other people who go through similar things.
Right. But I think that, you know, I guess there's a part of me that wasn't surprised when Kylie was saying that the hospital dealt with it the way that they did. I met with someone yesterday that works with at-risk youth, and she trains law enforcement who are first responders oftentimes to these kinds of kids. And she said they have no training with mental health, behavioral health, you know, emotional feelings as it relates to kids. They're very, you know, law enforcement focused and what's right and wrong and legalities of things, that they have no ability to be compassionate, and they have to be taught that. And so she goes in and she teaches these law enforcement officers, you know, how to be more compassionate. But if you don't have the gene, it's really hard, you know, to rub the film off of that in within you. But you know,
especially when you're trained to serve and protect.
Right. But you know, she said that they hadn't had any training in this since like the academy. There's been nothing since to really help keep them connected, to keep them sensitive, to keep them sensitized to what's actually going on in their communities. Right. And she said it's been such an eye-opening. She said the people that now she's moving up the chain, she's got to go to the older population, like the commanders and the sergeants that, you know, haven't seen a kid in 40 years, you know, because they're not in the beat anymore or whatever. Right. But, you know, I think that we assume that when you're in certain types of industries that you should be kinder, more compassionate, more sensitive. And I think at the end of the day, you're just still a human. And,
right.
You know,
well, and same with like special needs. I know that there are organizations who are training police officers how to deal with certain special needs, because that could look like drug abuse. That could look like someone who's belligerent. Like, you don't know if somebody has autism or another special need, you know, if how they respond to that, you know, it fuels.
Well,
you know?
But again, I think we forget sometimes that no matter what your field is, that if you're doing something that involves engaging with any kind of human contact, that, you know, being aware of your surroundings, being aware of other people's stories, you don't always know everyone's story. So I think, you know, anyway,
so we've got like 2.5 minutes left.
Oh.
Anything new with you?
Anything new with me?
Well, I mean, today is, I just wanted, and I know that you feel the same way, like we've been on KHTS in the LA area for 6 months now. And I just wanted to thank them and for their hospitality and for having us here. But today is actually our last show here. And so we just wanted to, Peter, woo! Peter's looking
at us. Bring in the clowns.
You know, so, we do have stuff going on, and you should definitely stay with us because broadcast is not going away. So you can get more information. The best way to get more information is to go to our website and sign up for our newsletter, because then it just goes to your email and you don't even have to do any
work. And if you
don't
sign up for it, it just keeps popping up on your screen. So you might as well just
sign up for it. So annoying. Yeah. But sign up for the newsletter. You'll get, you know, information before anybody else, because everyone knows that's what you want. And, you know, like us on Facebook.
News. Yeah.
At, broadcast on Facebook.
And Twitter.
And the Twitter at Broadcast Show. And it's
YouTube, and we're going to be on Spreaker. And
we are on Spreaker.
Oh, we are on Spreaker. Right, that's what I meant.
Yes.
We meant.
We're on Spreaker. But we're on YouTube. We're on Instagram. although I never know what to put up there. and, you know, we're everywhere, but the best place to go is broadcast.com. And get that newsletter, and that way you can find us.
But again, thank you to KHTS and Peter for being our faithful listener.
Peter, you have you've dealt with us for a good 6 months. And,
I think we've corrupted Peter just slightly.
Yeah, Peter came in kind of like sweet and conservative, and now he's just
kicks back, puts his feet up.
I'm corrupt.
You're like one of the girls now.
Yes, I'm a corrupt woman.
So, which been your favorite? I'm you know, putting you on the spot now. Have you had any favorites in the last 6 months?
My favorite broadcast.
Yeah, or just favorite moment, favorite broadcast.
There's a few. There's actually a bunch tied up there. We had a bunch of crazy guests, actually. The first show, it was my first show, and I forget her name, and she was on that
Shaws of Sunset. Oh, Shaws of Sunset. Yes, MJ.
That was kind of funny and ran. I had no idea what I was getting into. That was a fun show, and I told my mom, because my mom loves that show.
Yeah.
And so she's been a fan of
those too. Well, we'll have to make sure we post that one on the website so people can, you know, an encore presentation. Right. So we have 10 seconds left. Thank you so much to everybody listening. Sign up for our newsletter, broadcast.com.
And you will hear us next week, just we don't know where yet.
Over and out.
We do, but you might.